Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan here with you until 3 o'clock on this day, this very sad day, where we are hearing the news that we have lost Micheál Ó-Maire Shaoirthig, a Kerry man extraordinaire, an Irish man extraordinaire. I see the statement in from the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, there saying the word legend gets used too often, but for Micheál, it is almost not enough. And those are very, very true words. I played this clip earlier when I was talking to Shea Byrne, and I think we should play it in because it was in his own words, his feelings about leaving the stage, his first leaving of the stage when he retired from commentating back in 2010. And this is Micheál Ó-Maire Shaoirthig speaking on The Late Late Show on that occasion.
I've been enjoying every single game I ever did since 1949. Now I began to say to myself, supposing the day came that I'd no longer enjoy it, that I'd look upon it as going out to do a day's work. Mm. And I said I'd hate to experience that. I think that's what swayed me more than anything, to decide that I've been doing it long enough, and while it's still most enjoyable, to leave the scene.
Micheál Ó-Maire Shaoirthig, in his own words there. We should say as well, of course, the country is coming to terms with losing a national treasure, voice that was the voice of the GAA, but the voice of Ireland for many of the diaspora for decades. But of course, his family and his close friends have lost somebody very, very special. And our thoughts, of course, are with all of them today. I want to go to somebody who would have known, who knew Micheál very, very well. Bomber Liston, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
And I know I broke the news to you a little earlier there, Bomber. It's shocking. I mean, he was a great age. We say that, but it's always too soon when you're losing somebody of Micheál Ó-Maire Shaoirthig's stature.
Yes, look, he was a great friend and a great friend to a lot of people. But he's left great memories behind to a lot of people. He'll be fondly remembered. And I'd just like to take this opportunity of sending my sympathies to Helena and all the family. He was really, truly loved, especially by all Kerry people anyway.
Oh, that is for sure. And as I say, in those years when you were up in Croke Park on doing what you were doing best, it was his voice that was sending the word back down to us.
That's right, yeah. Great memories. He was training the team, the lads that were in Dublin at that time, and there was good competition between Mico and himself always, because he'd be sending down the few weeks before the big matches, the Munster finals and semi-finals, he'd be sending down the Dublin troops, and he used to take great pleasure in seeing how fit Mick Spillane and Jacko were, and he'd love better but having a few of them race against a few of our lads down in Killarney, Mico's lads, you know.
Right, it was like, I'm putting them through the paces better, yeah, than you down there.
That's it.
Tell me, I heard Des Cahill saying this earlier, that, I mean, we think of him as this legendary, this legendary figure and that incredible voice and those unbelievable descriptive skills. But he was a bit of a fierce rogue as well, wasn't he?
Oh, full of devilment and roguery, and you just couldn't get to the end of him. Nothing he liked better than getting one over you. Like, I used to golf a lot with him, and if he heard that I was out late, when he was down on holidays, if he heard I was out late, he'd be ringing for a game to the following day. And when he beat you, he told everyone. But we had some great, great days and great memories, as I said, and he'll be missed hugely.
Tell me about the time he was playing with Mick O'Dwyer in the States.
That's right, yeah. He was telling me the story out in San Francisco. They had two friends, two priests outside there that used to take him out in golfing in the Olympic Club. And but Micheál was telling me he saw the priest going into the pro shop and buying two drivers. And one of these was the driver at the time of Bobby Jones, and the other was some inferior make. And Micheál knew that whoever was going to win would have the choice, because one priest would play with Michal and one would play with Mikko. So he said it was the only time he caught Mikko that he kept all through the round, knowing that Mikko was better than him, we would beat him. He kept praising, not the Bobby Jones, the other driver. And every chance he got, Jeannie, that driver, and he used to take every few swings at it. And sure enough, Mikko won. And given the choice, Mikko went for the, I don't know, the Schlesinger or whatever it was, but nothing was happier than me all to get the Bobby Jones. And even coming back into play, and Mikko, I think he told me, went down, halfway down the aisle, team, I think I have the wrong driver. And Michal says, no, you don't. You have the right one now. You made your choice. But he got a great, great, great fun out of getting one over Mikko, you know.
You were in Kuala Lumpur with him for those Asian Games. That wouldn't have been 8 or 9 years ago, was it?
I'd say maybe 10. But it was there I really just saw how professional he was. Like, it was, geez, there was 90%, 100% humidity out there. And the day before the final, he was going to be commentating on the final, and he was going around to all the teams and doing his research. And, God, I was in the shade for most of it and trying to drink as much water as I could. I couldn't stick it. But he was out with just a hat on him and gave hours and hours and hours gathering the information. And then I was on the final. He came to the final the following day, and we were inside. And about to take off, he produced a book with all the research in it, all handwritten. And he's actually in the final. His son was playing for one of the teams. And but he was just so unbiased and so professional and had all his research done, and it was just a pleasure to be a co-commentator with him anyway. He had all the work done.
Incredible, isn't it? Even at that stage of his career, that he was still putting in that legwork.
Oh, yeah, but like, he kept himself very fit. Just another story that comes to mind. I remember when I was early 50s there, there was a charity to climb Mount Brandon anyway for raising funds. And I remember going up, and I wasn't in great shape anyway. Some fellas will say I never was, but going up anyway, the last 200 yards, I said to Lillian, and Mick Galway was with us as well, and I said, Lillian, I'd say this is my last time up here anyway, finding it hard, and eventually got up, and above Michal, early 80s, no bother at all to him. And I just turned to Lillian and I said, I think I'll have to review it after seeing Michal, like, you know. But he was just kept himself so great shape, and he was just great fun to be with, and everyone enjoyed his company.
It's so hard to believe he's gone, actually. I mean, he's such a massive presence in all our lives for such a long time.
That's right, and always will be, like, because he's been on the telly so much, and the commentators, and everyone has a story of things they've enjoyed. And it was just beautiful to be in his company, and beautiful to be considered a friend. And he has had many, many, many friends, and will be seriously missed by all in Ireland, not only in Kerry.
Yeah, well said, Owen. And I know you have to go there, and you were very good to take our call. But I know you wanted to do that for Michal.
Absolutely. And again, so deepest sympathies to Helene and all the family. We're thinking of you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks. That's the Bomber Liston there. Another legend. I want to bring in Michael Deignan now. Michael. Have we got Michael?
Katie, how are you?
How are you,
yes.
Michael?
I'm not too bad. I regret listening to the Bomber there.
I know. Great stories.
Great Kerry man, yeah. Yeah, no, look, just like the Bomber, Katie, before I suppose we go any further, just pass on the condolences as well to Helena and all the family. And great family man, Michal. He always wanted to get home every night, no matter what part of the country he was in doing a function, and I was at many of them with him. He had to get home that night, home to the family. So very, very sad news this afternoon.
Absolutely. But like, as a player, you would have had many. When did you come to know him first? Would it have been in your playing days, yeah?
Yeah, I suppose, look, I came on the Offaly panel in the mid-80s, about 86, 87, after coming out of minor, and would have known Michal. He was a legend, obviously, all his life, but it would have been a legend from our point of view. And what struck me immediately about him was coming down on the dressing rooms, and that just how friendly he was, how affable, had a word for us all. And right throughout my career, you know, I don't think he ever said a bad word about any player, which it's hard to do when you're doing a job like him, but he was more of a storyteller, I think, when he was doing the matches, and he was on the radio, and he was bringing things to life to people at home, and he just had an unbelievable way with words. And, you know, obviously many of his commentaries are iconic. And so throughout that period, right up until he retired 2001, I would have sort of known him on that basis. And then after that, I suppose I started working myself down on the Sunday Game, and I was doing lots, mostly television, but I did lots of radio as well at that time, and started doing, and I did many commentaries with Micheál as co-commentator all over the country. And I got, we just happened to hit it off and got friendly and started playing golf together, and just became very good friends over the years after that.
And that story that Bomber was saying there about the handwritten notes, the big book of notes that he'd put together before a match, was that the way you remember him, or how did you see him operating?
Well, he was a total professional, and like anybody that makes anything look easy is very well prepared, and he was meticulous in his preparation. But he also then had that just brilliant turn of wit and personality to see things as they happened in front of him, but to throw in a story, you know. Often there'd be a goal scored and Micheál would be telling the story and he wouldn't break stride, he'd go back then after, you know. He was on the radio, so he was painting the picture, and he was a meticulous professional, but he was great fun. And I remember that more, I suppose, about him as well. The first time I actually played golf for him was down in the Curragh with Dermot Hannafin, who used to play football for Kerry, and a guy called Dave Ash, who was, I think he was the chief of staff in the army at the time. And Dave and Micheál took on myself and the big D, as Dermot Hannafin was known as, and I wasn't playing golf at all. And I hit a terrible drive in the first. I just knocked it down over the hill in front of me. There's a big hill down the first in the Curragh, and I was halfway down the hill and trying to find my ball, and the wheel broke off my trolley as well. And Micheál, of course, was very, you know, suave, and he straight down the middle, and he was down the middle of the fairway waiting, and we were up on top in the middle of this hill, and I was trying to fix this wheel and trying to do this, and he shouted up to Dermot. He says, "Is everything okay?" And Dermot says, "We'll be there in a second." He says, the wheel came off Michael's trolley, and he said, "I expected the wheels to come off," he says, "but not so soon." And we were in first hole, you know. He was just, he had his words at will, and he was great fun, and he loved staying out with us, and he never drank, never took a drink, but you know, he'd drive us, and he'd love coming and meet our friends afterwards at Nace or wherever it was, and just a brilliant man.
I mean, that's the thing, I've heard so many stories of social nights, great nights that he was part of, but as you say, never drank.
No, he collected me one day in Nace. I lived in Nace for a number of years, and back in Offaly for years now, but he collected me with Jack O'Shea one evening in Nace, and we went to Cork. The late John Egan, the great Kerry footballer, was having some function at Ballincollig GA club in Cork, and we went down to it and we stayed there all night. I don't think we left there till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and he dropped me back in Nace, and he dropped Jacko back in Leixlip and on home, and you know, and never took a drink, but loved the company. He'd have his pots of tea, have a couple of club oranges, and loved the crack, and loved getting to know, as I say, wherever we were, he'd be in no rush whatsoever. He wanted to meet your friends. He wanted to have the crack and the chat, and it was great bringing him in because he was such a legend, you know, to meet the lads in the local in Ace or wherever it was. So,
oh yeah, that's fairly good kudos there if you're bringing Micheál and Murray into the pub with you.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah. And he's so natural. And he was himself, and that, the way he was on radio and the way he was in life, he was a totally unique man. I've never met anybody like him, and I don't think I ever will.
He was the real deal. There is no two ways about it. Michael, I really appreciate that. Thanks for sharing that with us. An incredible man. I've got Anna Geary. Anna, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Katie. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. You would have worked with him as well, would you?
Yeah, I mean, when first of all, I suppose growing up in my house, the GA was always on, and the radio was always on, and the All My Heart thing for me was the voice of the GA. So to have ever had an opportunity to work with him was such a privilege. It was all the way back in 2010, and we had lost to Galway in the All-Ireland semi-final of the Camogie. And I suppose the only silver lining of that was I got the chance then to co-commentate on Radio 1 with the great Micheál Murthig. But listening to Michael there talking about his meticulous preparation, like, I can remember even being in the crow's nest, you know, in the lead up to the game, and you know, he had his system, and I was just in awe, because I suppose when you're listening to him on the other side, you know, when you're listening on the radio in your kitchen, and he has, like, you know, he has the knowledge, and he's so sharp, and he'll know whatever sub is coming on, and he'll have the information about them, and then he'll be able to jump back to the match, and then he'll have a story, and he had an ability, like Michael said, without breaking stride, to just blend all of these different stories together. So to actually watch him, you know, in motion was just amazing. Like, at times in the middle of the match, I actually forgot that I was commentating on the match because I was so enthralled by what he was doing and how he was doing it. And I had to remember, God, he's going to be asking me for my opinion in a minute, because I found myself just watching him, and he really loved what he did. And I think that came across as well when you were listening to him. But it was such a privilege. And like that year, in 2010. He retired from commentating, like the Cork Down football all Ireland. It was the last match that he was, you know, broadcasting on. So for me to have even had that chance, my often dad and I would often have talked about that, that that was the only upside of not playing with Cork, that all Ireland, was that I got the chance to commentate with him. And, you know, just, I suppose people will always talk about Micheál with such love, but I think it was his ability to bring matches to life and his wit, like obviously the level of professionalism he had, but the lines that he would just throw in the middle of a match and in the middle of a commentary. And I remember my late dad always saying one of the ones that he loved was when Joe Rabbit and Pat Fox were playing Croke Park against each other when Galway and Tip were playing, and when he said about, you know, I've never seen a rabbit chase a fox around Croke Park, I've seen it all. He just, you know, I suppose he brought games to life, and he had just an ability to inject colour. And, you know, I suppose really it's wonderful that we can celebrate him today, but it's just such a sad day as well for the GAA world because, you know, he was one of the very, very best.
It must have been daunting though, Anna, was it? I can't imagine. When you, like, it's one thing to sit into a commentary box and do a comment when you, when it's not your, you know, when you're used to being on the field of play, but to have to sit in beside Micheál Mar Hartig and keep up with that.
Well, let's just say, I suppose I was having, you know, normally when you're playing a match in All-Ireland final, you have loads of nerves. I had loads of nerves that day just for a very different reason, you know. And, you know, I think like that, he just made you feel so at ease. And I can remember him, you know, as the legend broadcaster that he was. And he was still turning around to me moments before the ball was thrown in. Don't be afraid now to elbow your way in here, and don't be afraid to give your opinion, and don't be afraid to disagree with me. You know, he put me at ease because that was my very first, you know, live radio appearance, and to do it with Micheál and to do it in that way. And it was Wexford actually won their first All-Ireland and went on to win three in a row. But he put me at such ease, and we had such a brilliant day together. And I can remember afterwards, you know, in some ways it being one of the greatest memories for me as a Camogie player, even though I actually wasn't on the field of play.
Yeah, that's incredible, isn't it? And as you say, you should have been playing that day.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember now, it was very bittersweet for me, because any player will tell you when, you know, you're not in the All-Ireland final, having lost the semi-final to Galway, I was pretty distraught being there. But if nothing else, it was a nice distraction knowing that I was getting the opportunity and the privilege to be in the same, you know, place as Micheál and to work with him on it. But
And that's in the archives. That's in the archives now, Anna.
Exactly. Yeah, I probably won't listen back to it because I don't know how my performance will be, but I'm sure he was top class.
do you have a photo with him, do you, from that time?
Yes. Yeah, it was from 1 or 2 years later. We were working again at another match.
Oh, have we lost
Anna? In the room. Hello?
Sorry, Anna, I thought your line dropped there for a second.
No, you're okay. No, I remember there was lots of people in the GA, you know, in the GA world there, very well known, very well respected people. But the only person that I wanted to get a picture with that day was Micheál Mar Hartig, because I'd been so nervous a few years previous that I never actually got a picture with him the day we co-commentated together. So I made sure that we got a picture that day. And I found it this morning when I heard the news. So I'm so glad that I have it as a memory to keep.
Okay. Anna, we're going to take a break there. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
We're getting so many calls in. We have more people to go to after this. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, I want to talk to a man who produced Micheál Mar Hartig for decades, for 30 years, the ex-head of sport here in RTE, Ian Corr. Ian, you're very welcome.
Hi, Katie.
Sad day, Ian.
I just, first of all, I'd offer my sympathies to the lovely Helena and that great family of his. And the light has gone out of their life, but they will rejoice in the knowledge that they knew him for all those years.
Yeah, what a legend. I keep saying the word, but it's the word that keeps coming back to us.
Yeah.
What Anna was saying there and what Michael was telling us, and indeed Bomber, about just the extraordinary professionalism and meticulous research he would do before he would go into the box to commentate on a match.
That's right. And the thing about Micheál was he was funny in compared to other people, other commentators. In all the years I worked with Micheál, he never complained once about any of the commentary positions he had to work in. And I can tell you, primitive would hardly describe some of them. But Michal would never complain that he had a bad time. The OB guys who would have worked with him at one stage before his family came along to assist him with various things in the commentary would sit beside him. But they stopped doing that very quickly because Michal had a tendency when a score would go in or an event happened on the pitch, he would give them a punch on their arm and they had a lot of them move back into the commentary box. He was a phenomenon in the sense that he never allowed the white lines to limit his vision of what was going on in front of him. And he actually would have, if he happened to be in a ground where you could see maybe an animal in a field or something like that, he would, remember Richie Bennis, I can't remember the circumstance, but I think he had to point a free to win the match for Limerick, and Michal commented about the fact that there was a cow in the next field who was quite indifferent to what was happening on the pitch. And that was Michal's gift. He worked in images and he carried that on to everything else about him. I would have spent a lot of time, not a lot, but a good few times traveling down to matches with Michal. I would usually be in the studio, but occasionally you'd go down to do something, say, in Kerry. And Michal knew every inch of ground between RTE and Kerry. I remember asking him on one occasion, what are those white lines across the road? And of course he was able to tell me this was the way that the authorities had a way of testing the paint that would be best used to put the lines on the road itself. And then if you were coming back from Kerry, he'd say to you, do you think if we turned right here, it might be a more direct way? And I'd say to Michal, this is Kerry. I struggle to get around Drimna. I said, what are we going down here for? And what he was going down for was there would be some man living down a small road, small house, living on his own, but he would have won an All-Ireland or maybe two All-Ireland medals for Kerry. And Michal would go down and visit him for, 20 minutes or so and chat to him. And that was typical of Michal. He was fantastically interested in people. He would have this ability. When you met him first, or anybody met him, if you were in his company, the first thing he'd ask them, having determined who they were and got their names, he would say, and where are you from? And it is a living certainty that it didn't matter where, what village he was in the country, he would know somebody that they knew. And they were absolutely fascinated by the fact that he would know that sort of information. But he loved the whole notion of the GAA as a village. And he knew every person that came from any county in Ireland. He had something to say to them. He knew something about where they came from. He would be a man who would never make the mistake, as some commentators have, of mispronouncing the name of some small place. People hate that. Oh, yeah. Michal never would do that. But also, he was a desperate messer. If you were playing golf against him, as you walked to the first tee, he would say, I believe your putting has improved. And you say, what's he talking about? Until you got to the green, and then you realise as you stood over the putt, it was a ball hop, and now you're uncertain about your putting. That was the sort of thing he did. Or if you said
psychological warfare, Ian, psychological
absolutely.
Warfare.
Absolutely, and he was well into that. The other thing that he had a terrible habit. After the matches in Croke Park, for example, you would want him to do the report of the match, but he'd insist in walking over to the Hogan stand across the pitch, and it took him forever to get back because he kept meeting people on the pitch, and you just lost all bearings as to what he was supposed to be doing. And because he just could not resist the temptation of talking to people. He loved it. And the other thing he was, his observational skills were fantastic. There's a great story Jack O'Shea told me that after one of the, probably in All Ireland, it had to be if Kerry were in it, but he had got a present for some anniversary, I think, of his, from his wife, Jack. And he was wearing it around, it was a cross, a gold cross, and he was wearing it around his neck. And when he finished the match, he suddenly discovered it was no longer there. And he was saying this to Micheál the following day. And Micheál brought him back to Croke Park. He says, I know where that is. And he was able to walk over to the spot and pick it up from the grass, because there had been a contretemps between Jack and somebody else.
A schmozzle, as we say.
Arms flying.
Yes.
And he reckoned that's where it had fallen off. And he found it. And he was a magic man.
He was.
Who cared not only about the GAA. Funnily enough, it's an interesting thing about
Ian, I'm going to hold you and hold that story and hold on for me, please, because I have I have somebody hanging on the line. I know whose time is precious as well. Mary McAleese, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. What a sad afternoon.
What a sad afternoon. And I know everyone's thoughts are with the family. And you yourself and Martin would know the family.
We would, and indeed Martin worked very closely with Micheál's lovely, talented daughter, Nuala, for a number of years. And Nuala was on the phone this morning to tell us the bad news, the sad news that we had been tic-tacking with her during the week when we knew that he wasn't so well, and hoping, of course, hoping against hope that he would pull around again and hoping that he would live another 10 years because he just, well, you know yourself, he's the voice of the Gael. He is the voice, if you're away anywhere and you were listening to a match, he was the voice of home. And his storytelling capacity, you've just heard, what he was a man of hugely talented. I mean, just hugely talented. His powers of description, his storytelling. I still remember him telling the story of going to midnight mass when he was a youngster in a pony and trap when he was home in Kerry, and telling the story of describing that. And no book, nothing could do justice the way he did in relaying that story brilliantly on the radio. Just totally magnificent. And we have a great friend, a great late friend of ours, Pat Guthrie, also a great GAA man, who used to take Micheál when he would, because Micheál travelled the country. He had invitations from right, left, centre of all over Ireland. GAA clubs wanted nobody but Micheál to talk to them. And he would go from one GAA club to the other night after night. And Pat would drive him, and Pat would say that every time the tea was produced and the cakes and the sandwiches, Micheál would say, time to move on to the next place. And Pat was starving, but the promise that Micheál would make to him was, when we get home, when I get back to the house, he'd say, I'll put the pan on, we'll have the best fry up. When they got back to the house, Pat described all, you know, and Micheál had a big family, and he'd have to get every child out of bed, take them up on the knee and ask them all, Os Gaeilge, how they get on in school during the day. And he would pet them and kiss them and hug them. And eventually, when the youngest one, and I'm not sure if it was Nuala, but it might have been one of the younger ones, eventually, after about an hour of this performance of being Dada, Pat said to him, I declare to God, Micheál, if you don't put that pan on, I'll actually go to eat the child. So he loved telling that story. And everybody in this country, I would say, has a Micheál story. What a welcoming family, what a beautiful family to visit, what a gorgeous man to meet. Something about him mm-hmm. instantly made you proud of Ireland.
And I tell you,
he was Ireland.
Well, as a Kerry person, can I just say, we were never prouder than, I mean, what an ambassador for the county and for the country.
unequaled. You're entitled to be. I'm so glad that our family eventually married into Kerry, and so my grandchildren will carry that pride too. And of course, he had a great relationship with Valentia Island, where my daughter and my grandchildren are tied into now. Mm-hmm. And the pride that we have in him is matched only by the sadness that is going. Just the sadness that is going. The last time we were talking to him was actually, funnily enough, at a DCU event not that long ago. He was there. Bertie Ahern was getting an honorary degree from Dublin City University in honour of the anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement and the fantastic work he did in bringing that about. And to think of it, and there was Micheál there, along with one of his sons, and the humility of the man to be there for someone, to be there to honour Bertie on that day, because he felt strongly as an Irishman what a wonderful thing it was that we had peace, you know. And he wanted to honour the man who helped bring about the peace. But we, I think on this day we honour, and in the days to come, you'll hear many, many, many tributes to Micheál. And you know what? No matter what language they're couched in, we'll never be able to do justice to that genius of the Gael. His likes, as they say, will never be seen again. Weren't we lucky? Weren't we the luckiest country ever to have him? I mean, to describe him as a Gaelic sports commentator. And he was a genius of a sports commentator, undoubtedly. I mean, he turned each one of them into a drama of, you know, of ancestry,
epic
Ireland
proportions,
everybody's kith and kin named. And but just, that's just to limit him to one sphere. He was just an endless miracle of goodness and genius. And to hear his voice, I mean, you'd only be two words in and you'd know it was Micheál.
Yeah.
And we always will know it's Micheál.
Beautifully, beautifully, beautifully put, Mary McAleese. Thank you so much for talking to us today and sharing your memories.
Can I just through you send just a heart heavy with sadness and also heavy with gladness that we had him at all to all his beautiful family.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary McAleese. Ian, I interrupted you there because Mary was hanging on for a long time for us there. You were finishing one last story, I think, just in terms of his impact as...
Well, the one that I tell, because it's an extraordinary thing, really, in the sense that it was one day on a Saturday, funnily enough, Jimmy McGee was anchoring the programme and Micheál was doing commentary on a Railway Cup match, a semi-final. Well, it was in Hyde Park, I think, and Connacht were playing Ulster or Munster or somebody. And Micheál was leading into it, you see, and he mentioned the fact that he'd been there. Micheál always showed up about an hour before everything. He was always prepared very well. And he was sitting in the commentary box and he said, "I was sitting here an hour ago and I saw a man walking down the sideline with a wheelbarrow full of numbers." This was the guy who was putting up the score in the days before digital. And there were plates with numbers on them. So Jimmy and I nearly fell off out of the studio laughing at him. But about, I suppose, a fortnight or so later, a great friend of mine who was a colleague of mine, Ted Berry, and Ted had gone to work with Radio Na Gaeltachta. And every time he came back to Dublin, I would have a coffee with him and we'd have a chat about it. He said, "Wait till I tell you," he said. "I was in the hospital there a week ago visiting a friend of mine and we were chatting for a while. And then he said, 'Do you see a man up there in the bed?' And it was a guy lying in the bed and he had a pair of headphones on him and he was reading the paper. He said, 'That guy was brought in here about a week ago, catatonic.' And as they often do in situations like that, they put a set of headphones on him. And he said, one Saturday afternoon, he said, 'Your man was lying in the bed as he had been prone and feeding him intravenously and all that stuff.' And all of a sudden, he said, he started to laugh. And he nearly fell out of the bed laughing. And the nurses rushed in. And they asked him, what were you laughing at? He said, I was laughing at the wheelbarrow full of numbers. Now, that's the sort of effect that Michal could have.
Yeah. Actually bringing people out of comas. Ian, thank you so, so much for great stories, great memories. Thank you. We'll have to take another break there, and we've more callers after this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I want to bring in Jimmy now. Jimmy, good afternoon.
Hiya, Katie. How are you doing?
You have a lovely memory of Michal.
Well, I had a son that was diagnosed with cancer 10 years ago, and fortunately he's still with us today. But 10 years ago, there was a friendly match arranged between cancer survivors from St. James's and St. Luke's in Parnell Park. Mm-hmm. And on that particular day, Michal O'Meara Herty was doing a commentary, and they were all marched around behind the band, the lads that were playing. They were all, some of them were still in treatment and some of them were survivors. And my son had become engaged that morning, and the only people that knew were the parents of both of the people. And even his friends who were at the match didn't know it. And I said to myself, I'm sitting there and saying, Jesus, I'll slip across the pitch here, and I'm up the commentary box where Michal was. And I asked him, look at Jimmy, I'd love to do that for you. And he announced it on the public address system that Warren Lyon and Edele Feeney had become engaged. And Warren was shocked, and so were all his friends, because didn't know about it. But that was the kindness of Michal to do that. You know,
There's not many of us, Jimmy, that can say that Michal O'Meara Herteig announced our engagement.
That's a fact. And he nearly cut me in two of my sons. Jeez, I didn't tell my friends yet, he said, you know. So, yeah, it just dawned on me that was a nice story about. I remember Michal O'Meara Herteig. Now, I'm not going to delay you, but I'm 8 years of age. But I remember Michal. He did the commentary matches on the minor matches in Irish. This is when Michal O'Hare's time. He'd do the first match. So there used to be two matches of one day that time, minor and senior, and he'd do the one in Irish. But that's just a small little snippet of Michal O'Meara Herteig.
Yeah, and of course, Michal was such a friend of the language, such a Gaelgore over all those years
as
well.
That was his first love, basically. Yeah. Yeah. You know, the
Absolutely.
Irish language, yeah. And very proud of it.
Absolutely.
So there you are.
And that's Irish. Jimmy, thanks so much for that. And how is your son?
My son is now married with three children.
Okay, so...
So now, would you say he has, touch wood, he's still to keep an eye on him. But at the moment, he's doing very, very well.
Great to hear that, Jimmy. Fair play to you. Thanks for that.
Up Kerry, goodbye.
Up Kerry. Up the kingdom. I'm going to bring in... good luck. I'm going to bring in John now. John, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
Hiya, John. You have another memory you want to share of Michal.
Indeed, yeah. And firstly, can I just extend my sympathies to Michal's family as well. But my story is in 1986, our club here in Wicklow, Ballymanus, were better known as the Billies, and we won the Intermediate Football Championship. And on the Friday night after the final, we had a celebration in the local community hall where we showed a video of the match, etc. And RTE Sport at 7 sent Michal to join the celebrations. I think probably a cousin of my own who worked in RTE, Liam Lee, was the instigator there. But Michal came and he interviewed some club members and mentors, and the programme was broadcast then the following week on RTE Radio. So about 15 years later, I was at a hurling match in Nolan Park in Kilkenny, and after the match, my son Dara, he went to the press box and he joined the queue to get Michal to autograph his match programme. And so Michal duly signed the programme, and then he asked us where we were from, and I told him we were from Ballymanus in County Wicklow. And I mentioned to him that he'd done a radio programme many years previously, not expecting him to recall it, but he replied instantly, Ah, yes. We had a great night there with the Billies. And like he instantly recalled the nickname of the club, like, and I was just dumbfounded really that he had such a memory.
Incredible. And that's exactly it. Ian was describing that as well. This extraordinary connection with people and this incredible curiosity and joy of talking. He loved to talk.
Absolutely, yeah.
And when you think of when you think of all the radio programs he must have done over all those years, and to think he could reach back 15 years and remember the Billies.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, and we had a great night here with him that night, and that lives in the memory locally of anyone that was there.
Indeed, yeah. And I'm sure there's a few tapes of that radio program still knocking around Ballymanus.
There is, yeah. And and photographs of Micheál and so on. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Indeed. Yeah.
The first selfies. So, yeah. John, thank you for that.
Yeah. All right, Katie,
thanks.
Thank you.
A lovely story. And there's plenty of them out there. I bring in Paul now. Paul, good afternoon.
How are you, Katie? How are you?
You're a Laois man, Paul.
I am. I'm proud of it.
Indeed. And why wouldn't you be?
No, listen, I just want to express, I suppose, on the PRO with Collection GA in County Laois, and we would have crossed paths with Micheál a good few times over the years, and always found him to be an absolute gentleman. I suppose the first time we crossed paths with him was back in 2011. We were involved in a programme, I don't even remember, called Celebrity Banished Door.
Oh, indeed, yes, of course. And Micheál was involved in the commentary.
Absolutely.
Of that, didn't he? Yeah.
Yes. So, our banished door was Tony Cascarino, or what's this Micheál costume, Antoine Mascarino, or something like that. But anyway, we had Micheál down twice commentating in the field, which is like, it's a great thing for us to say. We had him actually on the field commentating in two matches, and he also commentated in the final up in Dublin when we played in the final against a team up through Ireland, Galway. Mm-hmm. But I just know, and he came down, I remember, one evening about 8:30 in the evening with his wife and his son was driving the car, and they parked up and he came out on the pitch, and we brought him in for a cup of tea and all. But his wife was telling me that after that they were driving back to Dingle. And we were saying, God almighty. He says, yeah, he would often do that and maybe head back to Dingle if he's not heading back to Dublin. So, I think this was late. So, geez, it must have been 3:00 in the morning before I go back to Dingle anyway. And I'm just trying a few stories. Just where he would have involved directly with our club. I remember that in 2014, one of our club members, Mark Attright, who was very, very highly regarded around the Carlow Laois area, developed motor neuron disease, and he wanted to do a fundraiser. And so we came up with this idea of sort of doing a sports show. And to be fair, Miriam O'Callaghan did it for us on a Wednesday night in the Donald Hotel in Carlow. Yeah. And it was absolutely packed. One of the first people we asked to do was Micheál O'Murray-Hurty. And he came down on the night, no problem to him. And she did an interview with himself and another great commentary legend, Jimmy McGee, the late Jimmy McGee. Ah. And it was absolutely brilliant.
That was some lineup you lined up there, Paul.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Mark was able to pull these guys out. We had Josh Schmidt, we had Brian Cody, even got Michael O'Leary, believe it or not. He was wondering why he was there amongst all these sports stars. But then after that, Mark's son, Stephen Attray, his name, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but Stephen was going to DCU, he's going to be a teacher. And he said to me, God, he said, I wonder would Micheál O'Murray-Hurty give me a reference. And I had his email from the banished door, so I gave Stephen his email, and Stephen emailed him, and he gave him a fantastic reference. You know, you'd swear he had watched him playing football all his life, but he was correct, because Stephen went on to be captain of Laois in 2018 and 2019, and he gave him a fantastic reference. And then about 4 years ago, we were involved in our first ever senior county final, and again, sent him a mail, Micheál, any chance to send the boys a good look message. The next morning we had a video of Micheál standing in his front garden or back garden, sending on the lads the best of luck message. And coincidentally, myself and a few friends were down on the Wild Atlantic Way on a motorbike trip just last weekend. And we ended up in a pub on Boher Pub. It's outside of Dingle, about 8 or 9 miles. And here's us touristy sort of people coming in. We got talking to some of the locals who were flitting between Irish and English in the bar. And the one common point we had that we brought up was Micheál Amárthartaigh, because he's local for the area. And the reverence in which to haul that man down there is unbelievable.
Oh, listen, and, yeah. Everywhere. Paul, great, again, great stories. And you know, as you're talking there, you just wonder, how did the man find the time to do all the little personal things he did, all the people he would call to, all those touches that he did just for year one club there? Just incredible generosity of spirit is all you can say.
Like and I'd say, like, there's many, many, many clubs like us around Ireland that he's done. And all I say is that, you know, I think today, any GL, a little part of the GA has died today, yeah, with Micheál's death, you know. And, you know, may he rest in peace. But, and on behalf of our club, Clash GA, we want to extend our condolences to his family.
Thank you for that, Paul. Thank you for that. Will we go? Thanks for that, Paul. Can I play the clip now? Yes, I want to play this clip. And this is one of my personal all-time favourite clips of Micheál Amárthartaigh. It actually involves a man from my own parish of Douai. Look, it'll speak for itself. It's a famous one. Off we go.
He was running for the first semi-final of the Derry Mirror Diamond Derby. Drood's Jono, the dog that all the crowds came to own. He's out at number 6, forging to the front, jointly owned by Patsy Button of Douai and His Royal Highness Prince Edward. Running on the rail, stretching it out, going towards the line. There's going to be a royal dog in the final of the Derry Mirror Diamond Derby. Drood's Jono over the line, first and a very popular winner here. I'm sitting between two very privileged people, joint owners of Druids Jono, Patsy Burton from Douai, and His Royal Highness Prince Edward. I think, Prince, your reaction to that great run by the favourite?
Well, it was great. No, it was great. It was well worth coming here.
That, my favourite one, turning to Prince Edward and going, Prince! Adrian, good afternoon, Adrian.
Good afternoon. Yeah, Prince. Oh, what a weather. What a race he had. Unbelievable.
Two very privileged people. And Patsy Byrne got the top heading there. not Prince Edward. Adrian, you particularly loved him for that turn of phrase, for that incredible comedic almost turn he had.
Oh, absolutely! He kept the place alive at the weekends. My own late dad died last month. We used to watch and listen to all the matches, and Dad got to meet him a few years ago when President Higgins came home to Galway for his first homecoming. Micheál came to Galway to see him. They were good friends, and they had the language and the sport and many things in common. But I met Micheál down in Cork at Joanna Reardon's premiere for her film about, you know, No Limbs, No Limits, and it was there I would have got to talk to Micheál about many things. But he was very interested in you. He had more things to ask you than you might think you'd want to ask him. And that's what stays with me, you know. He would ask you where you're from and what are you into. And when you tell him, he'd say, well, isn't that fantastic? Isn't that fascinating? And he would go on. He wouldn't stop it there, you know. You'd expect him to maybe move on or talk about something else or with someone else. But, like, you were just transfixed with him when you were in his presence, and like no one else in the world, you remember what was said when you met Micheál, you know.
He had, exactly as you said there, and I've heard this as well from other people that have been in his orbit, is that he just had great time for people, in the most literal sense, as in he gave people his time.
Great time, but great words. Like, there's nothing he ever said that I heard him say that was any chaffage at all. It was all meant something, and whether it meant something to him or you, it was just there was no wasting of words and time with him. you know, whether he wanted to tell you something that happened, let me tell you a funny one now, or and you were just left in stitches. Like, it was just, he was not just a commentator, not just a sportsman, family man. He was a comedian. He really was. When you look at all the Mihal Murthy, Marathi isms, you know, and the ones about Pat Fox and chasing the rabbit around Croke Park.
Do you have that? Do you have that line? Because Anna Gears, we were talking about that a little earlier.
That's the one I sent in.
Yeah, yes, it's Pat Fox.
He made me do it one day, and it went something like, Pat Fox is out under 40 and he grabs the slitter. I bought a dog from his father last week. Fox turns and sprints for the goal. The dog ran a great race last Tuesday in Limerick. Fox to the 21. Fires a shot that goes over left and right. And the dog lost as well. You know, it's moments like that where he bounce from one story to another, and it just made sense, you know.
Adrian, that's excellent. Thank you so much. That was very well done. We'll take more break. We'll take another break there.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I think with all the calls we're getting in, we could stay on air all day long. There's such love for Mihal Mura Hurtig out there on this day that we've heard that he has left the stage. And I have Pat O'Donovan now. We were listening to that clip, as I said, my favourite clip of all the great, in a very very hot competition, very competitive field. That was my favourite clip, the Patsy Byrne from Dua and Prince Edward, His Royal Highness. Pat O'Donovan, you produced that programme. That it was the Derby semi-final, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in Wimbledon, Katie. The Derby semi-final, and the thing was, he asked me what to call Prince Edward, and I said to him, Your Highness or Sir, and as you heard on the tape there, he called him Prince. That's why the Prince was laughing, you know. I have a few quickies of him. Down in the early 90s, they were in the All-Ireland football final, and he had to go to see them in training, but down were training up a mountain. And he had to go up the mountain with me panting behind him. And he passed Ross Carr out as well on the way up. But on the way home, he said, come on, we'll drop in for a cup of tea in Newry. And we wind up in the British Army place, sitting down having a cup of tea with the British Army officers. That was what he was like. Australia, his golf, everybody talks about golf. About him, he loved golf. He wouldn't give you a 6-inch putt. He said you'd feel the better for it by putting it in. But he had clubs in Australia, and he decided to put them, when he came back from playing, he put them next to the rubbish bin in the room. Mm-hmm. And when he came back that night, there were no golf clubs. They were in the rubbish bin down the stairs. They decided to get rid of them, you know. But he was some character, great man for Greyhounds. Is to have a few greyhounds together. And
he was, yeah, because we've been talking, sorry, Pat, we were talking about, I mean, obviously he was the voice of the GAA for all those years. But he was, I mean, he's a great love of horse racing, and as you say, the dogs as well.
And everybody talks about attention to detail and everything else like that. But any time we were doing the dogs, as regards, you know what a running order is. Well, Mihal's running order was a plain A4 sheet. That's what he used to work off. He was brilliant at it. You know what I mean? Nothing written. He just kept going. And we had some great, great friends, great travelling with Michael Fortune as well.
So, and that doggy world is a world into itself as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. He made some great friends and people from all around the world. Australia would be huge dog racing there as well. Yeah. And the people that would know him and talk to him. But, the Sunday afternoons used to be great fun.
Yeah.
He'll be missed.
He will be missed. Pat, you're very good to come on. I mean, I'm delighted to meet the man that produced that item, I have to say.
There was a good Kerry man, Patsy Byrne, as well, who was very, very loyal man and a very kind man to any charities that we used to run on the programme at night time, on a Saturday night and stuff like that as well.
Well, I can tell you...
It's terrible for a Cork man to say he's a good Kerry man.
He was... we're very, very proud of the Byrnes brothers in Douala, let me tell you. They did amazingly well for themselves and brought a lot of it back home as well.
In White Hart Lane in London is where Patsy was.
That's right. Yeah.
That's the business. Yeah. No problem. Katie, lovely talking to you.
Lovely talking to you, Pat. Delighted to get that inside story. So he was actually told to call him Sir and he went for Prince.
Highness or Sir. And he goes straight into Prince. That's why Prince Edward started laughing.
He did.
And the place was being beaten down outside by newspapers like the Mirror and stuff like that, and trying to find out what the conversation was all about and stuff like that.
Yeah, because he dragged it out a fair bit as well, didn't he, when he had the Prince in front of him?
Oh, he did, yeah. I know a better boy.
Pat, thanks for that. A great story.
Katie, thank you indeed.
Good luck. I want to bring in, oh my God, another legend now, Eddie Kerr. Eddie, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you? What a sad afternoon for all of us. And it's very emotional to be listening to all those lovely stories.
We're going from smiling and laughing to remembering the day, you know, and of course we have to remember that it is a very, very sad day for his family, of course. What an unbelievable loss.
An unbelievable loss, not alone to the family, obviously, but to all of us, and particularly us GA people. You know, I'm proud and delighted to say he's been a very good friend of mine way back from the time I was playing myself, and then of course later on, as has been mentioned several times, golf. We played a lot of golf together, and I was just thinking there of instances. You know, he every year he honoured us. We run a big classic, our own club, the Roar in a Steeg in County Kilkenny. We run a big golf classic, and Michal used to come down every year and play on my team, and he was some man to play with. I can tell you, brilliant. But we'd have him that night then, and he would give a talk. He would meet everyone, of course, which was brilliant, of our own club and the golf club itself in New Ross. But we'd after the presentation of prizes, he would give a talk and tell stories, and you could just watch the faces of everyone and hanging on every word and every story. They just loved him as all of us loved him. You know, I just thought during when I was listening to the programme, I never met anyone that did not love Micheál Amirtaigh. We all get criticism for everything, but I never heard anyone have a bad word.
But because, and that was said, I can't remember now, we've had so many tributes and paid today, because he somehow managed to commentate on all of those matches over all of those years, and really not, you know, undermine anyone or not give under anybody or have anyone come off that pitch hearing afterwards that something was said that hurt them.
Absolutely. As someone said earlier, he used to comment on the minor All-Ireland in Irish, and Micheál here would do the English broadcast. But there was another competition that time called the Oireachtas, used to be played after the All-Ireland, about 2 weeks after the All-Ireland. And I got on from the minor team, I got on to the senior team for that game. And we played in the Oireachtas final. And I remember it would be such a privilege to know that he actually mentioned your name in the broadcast. But I remember my mother telling me after, all excited, she didn't know Irish, but she said he referred to me as Eamon O'Keher on Manure Og, and she was able to understand that. So that's a memory for me from the way back in the past, 1959. But he was so generous with his time as well. Like when he used to come down to our golf classic, you know, we'd say, "We have a room book for you now, Micheál." "Oh no," he said. He'd say, "I have to go to Dingle tonight," and he'd leave about 12 o'clock for Dingle, whom, as you know, he loved being in Dingle. Mm-hmm. But I remember one time also, I used to always give him a ring, you know, about a month before the classic, and I rang the house phone, And I was speaking to his lovely daughter, and she said, he's not here at the moment, Eddie. You know, he said, she said, would you ring about six? He'd be back. I said, oh, is he away? Is he down the country? No, she said, he's coming in from Singapore. So she said, will you ring at six? Oh, God, I said, I better give him a bit of time. Or she said, you better ring at six because he's due to be up in Tullamore to present medals later on that night. So the way we all, I suppose, we took advantage of him. He's so generous with his time.
He packed a lot into those 93 years. There's no doubt about it.
Sure did.
Eddie, thank you for that. It's great to hear from you. Great to talk to you. And great memories as well of a great man.
Lovely memories. And thanks for doing such a lovely programme about him. It's so emotional.
Oh, it's such a great... It's just lovely to hear everyone's stories, Eddie. I've got a few more great names from the GAA's very recent and maybe not so recent past. Will I bring in Charlie Redmond? Charlie.
Good afternoon, Katie.
How are you doing?
Well, it's a very sad day. Like, I read this morning that Micheál has passed. It sort of hit home then, like, and you read that he was 93 years of age. And what actually surprised me was that he did his last All-Ireland commentary in 2010. I didn't think it was that long a pass. I would have given it only half that time since he passed. Yeah, and it's a sad day. And again, like everybody else, condolences to his wife, Lee, and her family.
You know, of course, he's very much associated with those Kerry players that he trained himself, you know, Jacko and the likes that were based in Dublin that time. But there was an incredible camaraderie between the Dublin team of that era and the Kerry players and that whole setup.
Absolutely. And like, we knew Micheál's heritage, you knew he was from Kerry and he was a proud Kerry man. But he never let that sort of cloud his commentary when Kerry were playing against anybody else. He was the ultimate professional in what he did. And he would come into dressing rooms, he came into our dressing room nearly every occasion when he was commentating on the game. And he'd obviously be coming in, he'd see somebody didn't have a gear bag with them, so he'd know they were injured or they weren't starting or they weren't in the panel for that day. But he never divulged anything to anybody else. And now, I'm not sure it was playing Kerry, did he not go back into the Kerry dressing room?
I was going to say, are you sure about that now, Charlie?
But he seemed to. But I remember a couple of great stories with him where I once asked him, we were doing some interview in Crow Park some years after I retired, and my youngest daughter was with me. Now, to my great shame, I'm not a great Gaelic or I'm a little bit of Irish, but not an awful lot. But my daughter, who was about 12 at the time, had been to a Gaelic school and been to the Gaelic talk many times. And when introduced Micheál to my daughter, Sarah, and they start talking off Los Gaelic, and they were talking, you understood some of what they were saying, but not all of it. And afterwards, when we were finished, I turned to Sarah on the way home in the car, and I said, what did Micheál say to you? He told me not to tell you. So I looked at my own daughter. I told him. And I remember another time, asked him jokingly, I says, Micheál, I says, which should be fair? You be fair to football or you be fair to hurling? And he looked at me and he says, that's like asking me, do I have a favourite child? He says, I can't answer that. And he was such a proud Irish man, a proud Kerry man. He was proud of the Irish language and everything that he stood for. And so, as someone said earlier on, he was a great ambassador for everything.
Absolutely.
And he'll be sorry for this throughout the GAA.
Absolutely, absolutely. Charlie, thanks for that. I'm just watching my clock and I've so many people I want to try and bring in. Can I bring Barney Rock? Barney.
Hello, Katie. Very, very sad day, but we all should remember him as being a great man, and we should be privileged for him to have been in our lives in many ways.
You remember him? I mean, he started off as a school teacher, going back that far.
He did, yes, and I would have been involved with Dublin Minors back in '78, and Micheál would have done the commentating on the Minors. And I always remembered, whether it was because I was just Barney, I never had an Irish name for Barney. And being small, the shortest rock, you would think that would be very short, but it was Barney McIncorrick. So it was a real long name. But going back to them days, he would always have that presence. He was fantastic. And one of the stories, was when in 2001, and before the Leinster final, the little school, the kids would have been playing that particular day. But Micheál was doing the senior game, But at halftime that the kids' match was on, and he came over to me, he said, "I see your son Dean is playing, and he's not scoring a goal in 2 points." So he came over to say it, you know, on that particular day. Dean was only 10 or 11 at the time. And after that, then, as we went along, he says, "The young lad is doing well in the last 4 or 5 years." So he never got the chance to commentate on him playing because he retired in, like we say, 2010 from commentating. But he always had the interest. For everybody, all GAA people.
Yeah, and that thing, yeah. And knowing as well how important, you know, always making the connection with the children and, you know, remembering the names and just all those touches that, you know, took it to the extra. He went the extra yard, basically, with everyone.
It definitely was. And we would have met because I would have done a bit of commentating. I did it with Michal in a couple of games. But I would have brought Dean up to the commentating box at the particular stage, and he would have a quiet little chat with him because he had seen him from there. So it's all little things that feature and going forward. And for his wife Aline and the 8 kids and loads of grandchildren and that, you know, it's a very, very sad day. But as I said, it should be in the privilege for us to have known him and to have been commentators and matches because of him.
Indeed, indeed. Barney Rock, thanks so much for that. So we're going from Dublin, we're going right around the GAA map now. I'm going to go to Galway. Cyril Farrell, good afternoon, Cyril.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You've been listening to all of us there, talking about all the stories. Did you know him well over those years?
I did, from say, being managing Galway. He was around and didn't say it was RT and that. Like, look at, he was a gentleman and a scholar and a true sportsman. He loved every sport, but like he was an icon, really. Like, and he more or less took over the GAA, say, from Neil O'Hare and just continued on. And the boys they referred to, like his detail, his research was unreal. He knew everything about everyone, and whether it was a first cousin or an uncle or a greyhound or a horse, he'd paint a picture. You know what I mean? That he had that capability, and he'd always feel, Katie, he always had time for everyone. And you know these people that after meeting them or talking to them, you feel better. He had that ability to make you feel better no matter what the occasion was. Even if you had, after losing, say, an All-Ireland semi-final, you'd be down the dumps. He had this capability of making you feel good about yourself.
Yeah, he was. I want to try and get, because I just, hearing his voice again is just, it just lifts you again. I have a clip here from, and everyone will remember this, the Leinster Senior Hurling Final in 2003 when a streaker appeared on the pitch, and this is how Micheál Amuir-Hertig responded to this event.
It's a goal for Kilkenny, 2.18 to Kilkenny and 2.11. Well, there's a streaker on the ground now. He must be a Kilkenny man because he's quite happy with the situation right now. He's on the 60-yard line, the play's on the other side of the field. Ball now on the 50-yard line, sent back inside, picked up again by James Ryle. James Ryle gets it out to the corner, sent down the field. If the streaker doesn't mind, to be going over his direction now. He sees that, he sees the danger. He's moving out the field now, towards open territory in the far side of the field, and the ball goes out over the line. Hogan stands side of the field. The stewards are moving in on him now from all sides. The
Again,
unbelievable.
The picture painted. You didn't need to be there to see it happening.
Yeah, well, like he was like that, and I remember one time he told me like a bit of advice. Where he took, like he'd be always giving you advice. He said to me, when you're analysing the match, you can praise and talk about the good things, and if a fella has a bad game, so he said, you can leave him out, but you don't have to kind of pick on him at all. That was his kind. He never had a bad word about anyone, really. So he could walk into every dressing room in the country, which at the time, like if you're doing commentary, you might be allowed into every dressing room, but he had a free pass in everywhere he went.
He did, and you know, people might be criticised for that in some ways, for you know, not being critical, but that he didn't need to do that, and he could still tell you what was happening on the pitch. It was an incredible skill, actually. And as you say, he could look everyone in the eye after every match.
Yeah, the one that I always remember most for is the rabbit following the, you know,
oh,
following
yeah, the
hare. Yeah, the fox. Yeah, like, you know, that was an iconic one, really. Like, but he just said that he had that ability, Katie. Like, he painted the picture, made it flowery, and like you kind of had a feeling that you were there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cyril, I'm watching the clock. I want to try and get to one other call. I have to take a break here. But thank you for that, Cyril. For Cyril Farrell there, of course, from Galway, hurling manager of old.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we've been talking to all those greats from the GAA world, but of course, what's also coming through today is the huge amount of work that Micheál did for charities, all charities up and down the country and indeed outside of the country. And Padraig, you worked with Micheál in South Africa.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm good.
Katie, I know you're stuck on time there. I just thought with all the contributors, I'd like to pass my condolences on to Micheál's family at this stage, because he was like Murray Walker and the rest. He was a legend of his time, you know. Yeah, I had the experience, like a lot, like thousands of other people that travelled to South Africa to work for Nile Mellon Township Trust. I remember back in 2009, Micheál was our special guest at the time. And because he was our special guest, I had the privilege of sitting around the breakfast table at 6 o'clock in the morning with him. And I know one morning that I've seen Micheál at the table. I sat down beside him and was been interviewed by him for a few minutes because he was very inquisitive, as you know. And what transpired is that Micheál was watching me eating my porridge. And are you there? You are?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I was watching Micheál and he was watching me eating my porridge. And he let me finish my porridge. And after that, he just stopped and he looked at me and he said to me, I have never seen a mailman ever, he said before in my life, to eat porridge at 6 o'clock in the morning at 25 degrees. So I always remember him for that. He was a very pleasant, very nice man to have a conversation with.
He sure was. We're actually over time. Padraig, thank you so much for that. If I'm sounding a little shocked now, it's because just before we go, some very, very sad and shocking news has come through to us here. It's been the day for it. Tommy Gorman, our colleague, former colleague here in RTÉ, has died. I just have a couple of lines here. It is with profound sadness that we announce the passing of our beloved Tommy, who left us peacefully on the 25th of June, surrounded by his family. Tommy was a cherished husband, father, brother and friend, whose innate kindness and generosity of spirit touched the lives of all who knew him. And he is survived by his wife, Kira, children, Joe and Moya, sister, Mary and brother, Michael, who will deeply miss his kindness, wisdom, humour and presence. And I'm sure that is going to send shockwaves right around the building I'm sitting in here and right around the country, because Tommy, again, a legend in his own time and a huge presence in the world of journalism and politics here over the years. That's it. I'm over time. Apologies. Apologies to Ray. On sound, we had Chris O'Connor. Shane Galvin was our BCO today. Research was Richie Byrne. And today's programme was produced by Owen McLaughlin.
Liveline on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Step into summer with our new curtain designs and colours. Explore our latest designs in store or online.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.